Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Fish Bites, the Miami Herald's Miami Marlins podcast. I'm Jordan McPherson, and for the first time in a little while, he's finally finished his round of pickleball to be able to join us for an episode on the podcast. Andre Fernandez, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. I'm just physically tired after this new hobby that some people are into it. Some people that haven't tried it, you know, tease me about it. But don't knock it till you try it. It's quite the workout. It's fun. You can do it with friends. It's not, you know, pretty much that I know anybody could play it, but at the same time, it is a good workout. And trust me, it can get a little addicting out there. Once you play it, you want to keep on. And I can see why it's become a big deal. But anyway, that's not what I've been doing in the 2 months or so that I haven't been on the show.
No, but before we get into everything, what is it about pickleball that makes it so enticing, addicting, whatever it is?
I think because of the fact that, like, if you always wanted to be like a tennis player or something like that, this at least is like a way that it's not so daunting for people maybe that aren't the most athletic that want to try something. And then it's a game that's in constant motion too. Like, there's no breaks. Like, you're moving around the court, you're changing where you serve every 2 seconds. I mean, that's the fun part of it. And, you know, I mean, with me, I'm lucky because I have a few friends that I've, you know, kind of like they all do it and got me into it. Some of whom the audience knows, like a couple former colleagues of ours, Walter Villa, Manny Navarro. Yes, I'm going to put them on blast. So, yeah.
All right.
So that's why.
All right. So that ends the pickleball segment of this podcast. Now,
yeah, thankfully.
Now into what everybody listens to this podcast about, the Miami Marlins.
Yeah, come on. In the past we could do some filler time on pickleball because the Marlins was, you know, they were bad, they sucked. People were even the diehards were a little bit like, okay, now people want to hear about the Marlins because the Marlins are kicking ass and doing well.
Yeah, I mean, you said, I mean, we're officially at the All-Star break and the Miami Marlins, they're at 53-39 the season. They've won 14 games over 500, currently the top wild card spot in the National League. The record by total wins is the most wins in franchise history heading into the All-Star break. Their record by win percentage is the second best behind only that 1997 team, which, if I remember correctly, did do pretty well by season's end.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, as I talked about last episode, there's the clear gap still between the team directly above them in the Atlanta Braves and everyone else that they played. Again, Miami's 1-9 against the Braves, but that also means they're 52-30 against everybody else that they played so far. Yeah. They're 19, and that includes a 19-14 record against non-Braves teams that have a winning record at the All-Star break. Again, 4-2 against Arizona, 4-2 so far against Philly. They split their 6 games with the San Francisco Giants. Those are the 3 teams directly behind them in the wild card chase. Andre, just how would you, when you look at that, obviously, again, that Braves team is going to be that team that ends up getting the way probably at the end of the year. But just seeing what the Marlins have done so far through the break, when even again, we still, at the beginning of the year, we still said they're probably going to be fourth, maybe third in the division if they were able to keep up with Philly. To see what they've done so far, what stood out to you?
Well, that Braves team, in fairness, is going to get in a lot of people's way. At the end, I mean, the way they're stacked, it's a balanced team pitching-wise, hitting-wise, and they're hot on top of it, and they've been hot the whole year. That's the impressive part with Atlanta is that they haven't slowed down. I mean, by now you would have figured they would have hit some kind of rough patch, and they haven't. But to me, they're the odds-on favorite right now. If you ask me who might win it all, they'd have to be it. So, I mean, putting it in the Marlins, from the Marlins' point of view, to me it's the next step in their evolution, and I mean – I think this was the year, and you and I did that study a while back about, you know, rebuilds and looking at them. And I think COVID slowed down the process a little bit here, among a few other factors. But finally, the flip year that we were talking about seems to finally be here, and it has been so far. And what I mean by that evolution is you've seen the team finally take the big leap forward. Now the question is, can they sustain it? But obviously, you've seen this team a lot more than I have, but I think I can give you the perspective from someone that is seeing them live a little bit less, but has watched them and whatnot. They impress me compared to teams I covered in the past because I think they have sustainable elements. You know, I mean, they may not have even now, maybe like the biggest name roster. And to their credit, and I think the biggest thing is, and I think the example of why that it's more sustainable and remarkable what they're doing is they've lost two of their, they lost one of their biggest names, not once, but twice in Jazz Chisholm. He's not there. And this is still happening. Sandy Alcantara is starting to pitch better now, but for the majority of the year was not just not himself, was down and really subpar. And still they're winning. And the pitching has been good overall. The rotation, got the leaps forward that some of these guys have taken. Now we're going to see if they can continue to do it in the second half. You know, Braxton Garrett adding that extra pitch. We saw how good he's been. Jesús Luzardo now is turning it on. Five straight starts that he's been lights out. You know, moments like Eury Pérez, we know the debut, had the one bad start. Now that they're trying to, you know, we always knew they were going to contain his innings some way, whether it was limiting pitch counts, whatever, or what they decided to do, sending him down for a bit. But, I mean, all of that put together, plus the bullpen coming together more than it has been in recent years, plus the fact that they actually have been the most impressive. Well, and I'm saving the biggest standout to me for last, and that's this lineup, because for so many years, this lineup was not clutch. This year, for the most part, they are. And I know Luis Arraez is the big name and well-deserved for what he's doing. It's just on another level what he's been doing as far as the average and everything. But it goes beyond that because Soler being able to hit for power in big moments, I mean, you go up and down that lineup and guys are getting timely hits, which you were not seeing that before. And it's translating into like what I saw this past week. This team would not win. Forget about Atlanta for a second. A series like right now before the All-Star break. It's not everything, but let's take it as a little microcosm of what this team is right now. This is a fellow playoff contender, a division rival, a series that could mean something down the road, especially the last game before the All-Star break that you could almost feel like you want to just get it over with and get to the break. And this team takes two out of three, especially after they blew the first one. That didn't used to happen. And there's been several examples of that type of, you know, winning a series, let's say, or even sweeping a series, you know, and then everybody, you know, and then, yes, has the entire schedule been as daunting as before? No, I think it has to be said that the change in format has helped them, not having to face the division over and over and over. But we said it a bunch of times off camera, because I haven't been on the pod with you, but I, you know, there is a value in taking care of business. And that's another thing that this team didn't do. A lot of times we would look and say, oh, okay, they've got that team's 20 under and that team's in last place. So now's the time they should rack up some wins. And then what would happen? They'd go 3-5 or whatever, you know, or 3-6 on the road trip or whatever. No, now they're going 7-2 or 8-1 in a stretch like that. So anyway, not too much of a long-winded answer. I'll let you get back in here. But those are the things that have stood out to me, because those are the things that this team had not done for years, and now they're finally doing.
Yeah, and you hit on a couple of points I wanted to address also. Starting with Jazz, he went down again. I just think back to last year. They're in St. Louis, end of June, beginning of July, and they're hovering around contention. They were, I think, a couple games out of the wild card spot. Jazz went down, Soler went down, and at that point, we all knew the season was over. They didn't have the depth, they didn't have the pieces on the perimeter, on the outs, on the margins of the roster to step up, replace them. And the offense went from being middle of the road, which again was all they needed last year with the pitching, to being one of the worst in baseball the rest of the year. This year, Jazz has gone down not once but twice, as you mentioned. He missed 6 weeks with turf toe. He missed 39 games. The Marlins went 26-13 in that stretch. Granted, schedule was not the toughest in that stretch, but I thought back to when he went down last year, and then they went and were facing Pittsburgh and Cincinnati, two teams who they should have been able to take care of easily and basically put themselves in contention to be buyers of the trade deadline and just couldn't handle it. This year, they acquire Jonathan Davis. He steps up and goes from being a guy who was – barely a fringe big leaguer during his career to becoming the Marlins' everyday center fielder for a month. Holds his own, does more than hold his own, and keeps the Marlins in contention until Jazz comes back. Jazz is back for a week. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was going to say like that. I'm going to talk like the everyman at the sports bar that maybe doesn't follow as closely, but there's been times where, you know, because of our jobs, we follow it, and you know, to an extent, and also because we're fans too. But we're not fans, but like, you know, we love baseball. But very easily, I've told you, probably 90% of Miami is going, who the hell's Garrett Hampson? Who the hell's Dane Myers?
Yep.
Who the hell is, you just said him right now.
Hey, Jonathan Davis.
Jonathan Davis. And those guys are getting hits. Those guys are winning games.
Yeah, they're the reason.
And consistently, this kid's got four multi-hit games. Dane Myers has got four multi-hit games in what, six games that he's played?
In six, including the first game was him coming in the fifth inning to replace Jonathan Davis when he got hurt.
And what was one of the things I would always tell you about guys that they call up or whatever, whether they were prospects or not? You never see that someone come up and light it on fire for like a week or two. Like, why does that happen to everyone else and not them?
Exactly.
It's happening to them finally.
That was going to be my next point, was every time it seems like the Marlins play someone and it's the random no-name guy who has the series of his life against the Marlins. Now the Marlins are getting that. And then you look at some of the guys who they knew were going to be on the roster but didn't know what the role was going to be. Like Jesus Sanchez and Brian De La Cruz. Everyone thought, and the original idea was, they were going to platoon in one of the corners. Garcia goes down. De La Cruz and Sanchez, basically, De La takes left, Sanchez takes right, and both of them have produced like the Marlins hoped they would in the best-case scenario. You look in the bullpen and see a guy like Andrew Nardi, who barely plays. He comes in last year, gets absolutely shelled, and next thing you know, he's been, again, he's not the big name. He's not the closer like A.J. Puck or Tanner Skye or Dylan Flora, but he is probably one of the reasons the bullpen's having as much success as it is. Because it's the, oh, we need a guy to throw an inning? Andrew, go in there. Oh, we have two guys on and one out, and we need to make sure both get stranded? Andrew, go in there. Oh, we need a guy to throw two innings? Andrew, go in there. Oh, our main guys are down? Andrew, go in there. And that's probably why he's on the IL right now at the end of the break, or at the end of going to the break with triceps inflammation. Well, but
And that's a whole, that's a whole other problem.
Yeah.
That's the flip side. When we're talking about sustainability, you don't want to burn guys either. And that's a serious problem. But
the thing is also, it's, you look at these pieces, you look at these players, and it's, again, you expected Luis Arraez to hit above 300. You probably didn't expect him to hit 385 going into the break, but you expected him to be the guy to go out there, get about a hit a game, have a multi-hit game here and there. In the best picture scenario, you hope Jorge Soler to be hitting 20 home runs. But when you look at the end results of everything, this team going 21-6 in one-run games, this team having 25 comeback wins after basically last year, as soon as they fell behind, you're like, okay, I can write my game story now. To see this team where it's like, they're in the seventh inning, they're in the eighth inning, they're down a run or two, and you're just thinking to yourself, what weird, random way are they going to find a way to come back this time?
And the flip side of that, and I can tell you from experience, I'm going to give a thank you note right now to them for not screwing me up on Sunday when it was up, when it was 5-0, and all of a sudden the Phillies get two. That didn't happen before, where I had this sense where, like, yes, I paused because you never know, but the back of my head was thinking, this still feels safe. This still feels safe. And you never had that before. You always thought the other way around, like, oh, crap, here we go. No, it was like I was waiting for – I knew Philly had to do something tremendous to get to – for them to blow that, because you felt a little safer than in years past seeing – and what happened? They got the stop. And then, again, I go back to that lineup. Bam, 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 get a couple insurance runs. The things you just would not see this team do before, and it's remarkable. But going back to Arraez, I know we have this sort of like mapped out for this show, but bravo, my friend. If you haven't seen it, my friend here did a great job, great in-depth piece on Arraez. If you haven't checked it out, it's on MiamiHerald.com. I suggest you take a look at it. You know, before you'd see him take some swings tomorrow in the All-Star game, or on Tuesday, I should say, by the time you hear this, Tuesday night. Check this out. My man here talked to the legend, talked to Rod Carew. That's another one that's up on MiamiHerald.com now, that Q&A. How was that like? I read the words, but how was that for you, talking to, you know, a living legend like that?
It was absolutely incredible. And, again, it was a thing where it's just one of those things where it's like, you know what? When I'm mapping out that feature, it's like, okay, the guys I want to talk to, obviously – talk with the Rise, talk with the Marlins side of it, and figure out other people around baseball. Basically, anytime he has a big game, try to figure out the opposing team's perspective. And then I just thought to myself, you know what? Let's take a shot in the dark here. Try to reach out to Rod Carew, see what happens.
Yeah.
Ended up getting in touch with his son via email, and he just goes, yeah, what time do you want to talk? And I'm immediately in my head going, wait, I'm actually going to talk to him? I'm actually going to talk to Rod Carew? And I know Andre can attest to this, because I was basically texting him the updates as I was getting the, okay, yeah, I got confirmation, we're talking. Okay, oh, we're doing it this time. And then I asked him all of 7 questions. First few about Arise himself, and then just talking about the science, the art of hitting, and just hearing a master just talk about the craft and just being able to sit there and just soak it all in, even just from listening to him over the phone, was one of the most enriching moments of my young career covering the sport. And as Andre can attest, I was basically fanboying afterwards going, oh my God, that was the best interview ever, yada, 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 yada. And again, I did that interview about 2 weeks ago, and I'm still trying to figure out how that actually happened and just trying to soak in that moment.
Yeah, good, man. I was happy for you, man. You know, like if he was still alive, that's the kind of thing, like I would be a dream of mine if I could have interviewed Tony Gwynn, let's say.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that guy was so freaking good. I mean, hardly ever struck out. You know, such a class act player too. Like you hear about all the stories about him. Like that's the kind of that's that level of, you know, great player that you were able to talk to. And when you first told me you were going to try it, and I know you had like your doubts, like is it going to happen? I was like, give it a shot. You know, you never know. And especially nowadays, you know, baseball writers are good helping each other out. You never know. You might. And so I'm glad it happened. And yeah, of course, that's not just a cool story. You check it out, but a cherished memory for sure. I mean. Yeah. Like I said, man, I'm like, you can get him. I'm like, you get a freaking, that's a living legend, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. And now to move from the what the Marlins have done segment of this episode of the podcast to the what's ahead for the Marlins as they try to close out the season. 70 games left. Season will resume on Friday with the Marlins up in Baltimore. 3 games there before going to St. Louis. And at this point, they need to take advantage of what they have left in July, because August is going to be a doozy of a schedule. Just the quick rundown. 4 games at home against Philly, then a road trip to Texas, the Texas Rangers and Cincinnati Reds, both leading their divisions. Home series against the New York Yankees and the Houston Astros. A road trip to the LA Dodgers and Padres. And then home series against the Nats and the Rays. Remove the Nats, everybody else is in playoff position, winning records. That is going to be that stretch that really lets us know who these Miami Marlins are. Yes, they're 14 over .500 going in, but that's going to be a real test of a month there.
Well, you said take advantage of the rest of July, but remember, right out of the chute, you got a 3-game series at Baltimore, who right now is knocking on the door of first place in that stacked NL East.
But in that rest of July, you have Baltimore, 2 games against Tampa. The rest is you have St. Louis. You have, I believe it's Detroit and Colorado are the other 3 series. You have 9 of your 14 before an entire month of winning teams.
And St. Louis at Busch Stadium can be pesky sometimes, even this year that they're a little down. That team still has talent. And you can't completely treat the first half is etched in stone and it's gonna be a carbon copy.
Of course not.
Someone who has sucked in the first half is gonna get hot, is gonna get their beep together, if you know what I'm talking about. And there's more than one talented team that has too much talent to be as bad as they've been. They're out west in many cases. So don't be surprised if one of them is already getting it together, and we've seen it, the team that's been to the World Series a few times in recent years. But the other one, the constantly underachieving team, could get hot. Heck, even another team that the Marlins, I know they've fallen out of the standings, but if they hit a little 6-game winning streak right before the break there, is the Mets. Mm-hmm. And the Mets have also been a thorn to the Marlins too. Here's where the schedule comes in. It's beneficial because they don't have to play them as much down the stretch. Like Atlanta, there's only 3 more. I think the Mets, if I'm not mistaken, is six more, I think, or three more.
It's two more series. But the thing is, again, that's where this schedule is so awkward. The Marlins face the Mets twice in their first three series and then face them twice of two of the final four series.
Right.
So the Marlins basically face them both at either end of the season.
Beginning even without the head, but even without the head to head, like if these teams could get, they have to keep winning because these teams will get hot. This is still very much a cluster of teams in the wild card picture. The Miami may be two and a half ahead of the precipice right now, falling out of it.
Correct. Yeah, they're somewhere between 2 to 3 games that's been hovering basically about that this entire time.
So it's not, you know, it's not a like in the American League, the Orioles, I think they're like 5 or 6 ahead, which is more of a cushion. It's a good spot to be in, obviously, but it's not, you know, you can't fall asleep. And I think, you know, like I asked Skip Schumacher after the game, and he said it starts with pitching. And he's right, because, again, I'm going to go back to what we talked about with the bullpen. You can't – they've been so good. They've been so unselfish and patching together and working so well in their roles and all of that, and that's great. But arm fatigue, you don't want to tax them too much, and that's where their rotation health is going to be so vital, where if Sandy can continue to track upward the way he's been lately, that's a huge help. You know what I mean? And then if these guys, if Braxton can sustain it, let's see. That's a let's see. Can Luzardo sustain it? Is Edward Cabrera going to come back and not fall back on the IL again? What the heck are they going to get out of Johnny Cueto, who's coming back right after the break? So all these are questions where that rotation has to continue to carry them in order for them not to tax that pen so much, because, you know, innings are adding up and, you know, stretch run. And I'm curious to see. I really want to see how this team responds, because already they've achieved something this year. But if you had a second half collapse, it's going to really be sour. Be like, oh God, really? Like after all that, you know what I mean? So I want to see how this team, which is experienced in some spots, and Skip pointed that out. A lot of these guys are playoff tested, and that's going to be huge down the stretch, but they are still very untested and very young in other spots too. So how do they handle it? Like you said, in August against all those other contending teams, some of which know what to expect, some of which are kind of just like them, because yes, we named the Rangers in there, but the Rangers are very similar to the Marlins. It's the first time they've shot up and been good in a long time. How does that team? So anyway, long story short, I'm very curious to see how that mix does going into August, maybe even in September. I mean, you know, a solid, real playoff team, and I'm not counting 2020. I mean, in a real 162, we haven't seen this team go into September really, really in it in some time. It's been a little bit, you know, because even in 16, like I told you, like they were in it deep into the summer and then kind of faded there toward the end of August, early September, before, unfortunately, what we all know happened, you know. But to really push where you're like the final 2 weeks of the season and you're holding one of those spots, or maybe you're one out or one up, whatever, that's going to be interesting to see how they respond.
And I'm also interested to see, since you're talking about how this team performs in August, I'm interested to see how the roster looks in August. Just remember,
we got
the trade deadline August 1st, and sure, what the Marlins do at the deadline.
Buyers.
Yeah.
I mean, when was the last time they were true buyers?
Exactly. Yeah. Outside of 2020. Outside of when they went there.
Yeah, right.
Outside of that year where they acquired Marte at the deadline, that was really the only time that, again, since in a while. And really,
this is finally like in the real season format for me now. So
yeah,
it's more of that. But you're right. Let's see, because you're right. They probably, speaking of that bullpen depth and bullpen arsenal, they probably need one more in there somewhere. They probably, I mean, it never hurts to have an extra bat in the lineup.
Yeah. Yeah, no, especially with the bullpen, it would be ideal to get a righty, because, again, all of their main guys, A.J. Puck, lefty, Tanner Scott, lefty, Andrew Nardi, when he's healthy, lefty, Stephen Oker, lefty, four of their eight lefties. And look at who their righties are. Dylan Floro has more or less fallen out of favor. You've been seeing them go Scott Puck as the 8-9, and Oker's been getting a lot more of the high leverage. J.T. Chargois has been okay, but hasn't really been himself since coming back from injury. Oscar Brazoban has been up and down. And then their eighth guy is their long man. So they really don't have any unless Floro flips a switch in the second half, they don't have a true high leverage righty in that pen right now. So yeah, that's really a priority to get there. And then again, like we said,
but the question is, what can they unload as far as prospects that's appealing enough? That's appealing enough that you don't want to part with.
Yeah.
To get that righty pen guy, that an experienced righty pen guy that's dependable for a playoff team.
Yeah. And the other question is, who's actually selling? Because really, the main teams who would be in contention are for selling are in the central, or in the central divisions, which really are wide open. So you don't really, there are a lot of teams who are still in that I don't know where to go range, where which really only things up.
You can only pillage the Royals and the A's so much. So
yeah. And is there anything to pillage at this point from?
And that's the problem. There isn't much. That's not a. Those are kind of wasteland teams right now, especially in Oakland. So.
Yeah. So unless the White Sox decide, hey, yeah, we're not going to be in it, or some other teams of that nature around those ranges, because again, every team in the NL East except for the Nationals are in it. The Central.
Well, that's
go ahead.
That's it. No, I was just going to say that's the whole thing. There are teams right now that are probably like four or five under that this first week or so, right out of the chute, they win six or seven in a row or something. Like we're saying, somebody's probably going to do that. Then that team will hang around and think they still can do something. But you're going to have a flip side. You're going to have other teams that'll go from five under to like 10 under. And then that's who you look at and say, do they have anything that I want? So we'll see. And this is obviously assuming the Marlins don't have a seven-game skid of their own or something. You know, knock on wood for their sake that that doesn't happen and they stay in it. So
yeah, no doubt about it. And then just to quickly wrap up this episode, obviously with the All-Star break going on, the MLB draft is also going on. Marlins have, through day two, 10 rounds in, first two picks, they took right-handed pitcher Noble Meyer, high school arm, the top rated the top high school pitcher this draft cycle out of Jesuit High School in Portland, Oregon. I have a feature that I'll be running on him later on this week. Really good kid, really good family. Talking with his high school coach, hopefully in the next day or two. But he basically, long story short, really burst onto the scene this past year. If you go back to his freshman year, he was barely throwing about 80, 81. And then summer after going into his sophomore year, velo jumped up to 87, 88. Junior year jumped up to 92, 93, and then this year was hitting 97, 98, touching 100, has a wipeout slider, goes long, and has a changeup that he's working, a curveball he's developing. And the Marlins went with the thought process of, hey, yes, we know we need hitters, but we know how to develop pitchers. So if the top pitcher happens to fall to us, we're taking him. They did that with the first pick. They did that with their second pick, also taking another prep arm, and then they took college guys the rest of the way, a good mix between hitters and pitchers through the first 2 days of the draft. But again, the main piece from here is Noble Meyer. Gives them two Meyers among their pitcher prospects. As y'all know, they drafted Max Meyer in 2020. No relation, according to Noble.
Right. But, I was going to say.
Yeah. No, Noble Meyer made sure to bring it up himself, because he actually, when the Marlins were scouting him, their thought process was, if we're taking a high school pitcher at number 10, we really need to know who the guy is. So their area scout, Scott Fairbanks, went to every single one of Noble Meyer's starts, talked with him after every single one of his games, and basically built up that trust factor to that they needed in order to be able to pull the trigger on him. And it seems to have worked out. Noble actually brought up just the pitching depth that the Marlins have and the development that they've had, that they've done over the last few years, just to talk about why he's glad that he's going to Miami, because he saw, obviously, Sandy Alcantara, Yuri Perez, Max Meyer when he was healthy. You have the guys waiting in the wing in Jake Eater. You see what they've done with Braxton Garrett and Trevor Rogers the last couple of years. He sees all that and goes, okay, what do I have to do to be the next one of them? He already is trying to pick some of their brains as it is. So you're seeing a guy who's 18 years old, but already has the work ethic ready to go before he's even signed. So
young looking kid too. He looks like he's 15.
I know.
6'5", 15-year-old looking guy. Yeah. But he brings the power, man. I mean, I think if he, continues to not only to develop that too, that pitch, but develop that secondary stuff you were talking about, especially the slider. That's going to be a great tool for him. But, you know, and, you know, there'll be spots, you know, whether it's, you know, in the minors or eventually when he gets at some point, he'll get into spring training where he'll get to work with Mel. And that, to me, pays huge dividends for all these pitchers, the experience and the job that he's done in the past couple of years are really shaping that pitching staff. So,
Yep, no doubt about it. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Fish Bites. Thanks so much again for everyone for tuning in. We'll be back next week once they finish up that series in Baltimore, and we'll recap that and then preview what's going to be an emotional series for manager Skip Schumacher, his first trip back to St. Louis since becoming manager. He already faced them once down here in St. Louis, down here in Miami, seeing the Cardinals come in, and just you're able to see.
A lot of the ex-Cardinals are going back.
Yeah, again, you got him, you got John Jay, you've got a lot of guys on this club who have some ties to St. Louis, and Skip has already talked just in general about how much being part of the Cardinals, how much that has shaped his career from his time in the as a player, and then last year being a bench coach, John Mabry. And yeah, you understand just listening to him talk about the Cardinals, about how much that shaped who he is and how he got to where he is, and just his philosophy and his formula and his mentality when it comes to how he manages. And the Cardinal way has paid off for him so far in his first year in Miami. And we'll see just what the emotions will look like when he's out there basically this time next week. So with that's going to do it for this week. Thanks so much, everyone. And we'll be back next week.